Welcome to Societal Shapers, a podcast by PL Cadilla, the place to get inspired, find your purpose and courage, and get tools to become the next female leader, creating real results and meaningful changes.
Hi, welcome to the Societal Shapers podcast. And today I am your host, PL Cadilla, and I have Rabia Bazir from PT Foundation. Hi, Rabia. Thank you so much for being on this session with us. Tell us more about the work that you do with PT Foundation and what are you currently championing?
Okay, PT Foundation is a 33 years old NGO that championing in HIV related issues. So I'm actually from the Second Chance program that actually focusing on children and mothers who are infected and affected with HIV. So our programs are basically focusing on academic mentorship program and psychosocial and social welfare assistance for these clients. Yeah.
Okay. So how I found you was actually through a WhatsApp message talking about wanting to champion sex education in current school curriculums. So tell us a bit more about that.
Okay. So actually that I've been working on sex education since 2010. So with a friend called Juliana Ui. So she's also considered as a champion in sex education. So when newly got to know about sex education, I was also very excited to know what is it more about it. Then I found out that it is not about just sex, but it's more than that. So we call it as a comprehensive sexuality education. So it has almost about 8 components in it. Mm-hmm. Okay, so the components is also included on the values, family values, relationship, but rights, legal aspect, health diseases, preventions, and understanding gender violence, you know. It also talks about the skills of health and well-being and what's it called, the sexuality behaviors. So it's actually very comprehensive, holistic topic actually. So but then in Malaysia it was interestingly that it was a taboo, so because it is taboo, so that's make me want to know more why it's so taboo about it. So I do realize that as Malaysia is very multicultural and multi-religion country, that somehow this topic is very sensitive to us. Yeah. And is always related to immorality. So because like we have a lot of Muslims in the country, and then we do have Sharia law, and also we have civil laws, and there are certain things in Sharia law is like we can consider as like prohibited, like haram. And because of that, a lot of issues that going on, but we do not talk about it, or we sweep under the carpets, you know, so that we think that is not good to talk about and is embarrassing.
That's why I think, you know, that's where the conundrum is, right? So we find that sex is taboo and, you know, borderline immoral because, you know, if you're not married, then every act is considered as immoral. However, we refuse to educate our children or expose them to any form of sex education. And that's the irony of it, right? So when you mentioned about the areas of the sex education, which is quite comprehensive, can you explain a bit more on how you came up with it? Or is it a syllabus that's from a different country or from somewhere else? Who created the curriculum for the sex education?
Okay, this is actually from the multilateral agency like United Nations. So UNESCO, it has a guideline. It's called that UNESCO Technical Guideline on Comprehensive Sexuality Education. It's a guideline. It's not saying, it doesn't have a content like, okay, this other topic, it must be taught. Okay, so because the guideline is per country for age appropriate and culturally appropriate. So as Malaysia, we are Asians and we have majority Muslim, that it's up to us to actually design it according to our age and also culture appropriate. But they already given us 8 elements that must be included in this comprehensive sexuality educations.
Okay.
I won't say that Malaysia do not have at all sexuality educations. We do have. Since we were small, very small, you know, they are formally been taught and informally been taught by parents. So even at school formally, the way it has been taught, like very morally, you know. So like, oh yeah, boys and girls, they you know, you guys cannot be sitting together, you know, there is a gap in between, and then you need to protect yourself from the boys, you know, you need to protect yourself, you know, you'll be ashamed, fear, and if anything goes wrong, is bad, you know. It's always in, like, if you do something and it's going to be, what's it called, sinful, you know, it's very punitive way and very...
Yeah, like, so that's not really sex education, is it? That's really just like, you know, fear-mongering people to say... You know, if you behave in certain ways without explaining the context of why, that, you know, that is something which is dangerous for you to be in that kind of situation, because then something will happen, and whatever that something may be, it's not explicitly explained, because as you were saying that it is taught formally and informally, and I'm trying to recall, as I, you know, I did the entire Malaysian education myself, I can't really remember having any proper sex education or talk about sex, teaching us about, you know, the basics of it, the biology of it. Neither was it in biology subject, or was it in agama classes. We weren't really taught this. But has it changed now?
Okay, if we can even see that, like, for example, in Form 1, they're talking about the reproductive system. Mm-hmm. But it's very academic. Very academic. So even the teachers would just read the book and then just talk about, okay, there's a woman morbid body, there's a man body, there's hormones. It's very academic. But I never seen teacher in during my time that actually explain why the changes, puberty changes, why the girls are so different, and how to embrace your diversity. You're very unique. The body development is very unique. Yeah. You see, and even to make them to actually acknowledge, yeah, I'm smaller than the other friend. Yeah, I have acne, I have pimples, but my other friend doesn't have that, you know. I have more hairs, you know, like body hair, but my friend doesn't have body hair. Is it normal for me? Kids do have these questions, but we don't talk about it. You see, this is very basic. I'm not talking about something very deep, very sensitive. It is a very basic body image, but we don't even talk about it. And that's the reason why in Malaysia, we do a lot of harassment on body image, body shaming.
Yeah.
We do that. And it's actually, it's a crime. Recently in Malaysia, it's a crime. But not many kids will know that. And we tease, oh, you're fat, you're dark.
I didn't even know that. Body shaming, etc. is actually a crime now.
It's a crime.
Because what's punishable by what sense?
You can be prison for that. You know, you can be get fined for that, because we do have a lot of cases on suicidal attempt because of this. And just nowadays, they have exposure to social media. And do you remember the girl in Sabah that had a pull, like, to die, not to die, to suicide, not to die? Yeah, it's happening in Sabah.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was just Twitter thingy, yes or no. And and people was like voting for yes. And she committed suicide.
Oh my God. When did this happen?
I think a year ago, 2 years ago, something like that. Just quite recent. So body shaming is something big in our country. And our parents sometimes compare their kids with other children.
Yeah.
See, that's also cause trouble, like mental health and also socializing, you know, the self-esteem, poor self-esteem and so on. So what I'm saying is, even as simple as that, we can't be talking in schools, and it's not even included that. Yeah. How could the teachers can talk deep and talking about relationship? See, in school, we know that kids have boyfriend, girlfriend, and it's a trend having coupling in school.
Yeah.
Okay. Some parents say, oh, yeah, I found your father, and your father was my high school sweetheart. Yeah, I do. We understand that part, but the children don't even know what is consent age. You don't even know you can't just simply share your photo to your boyfriend, because later he can just use to threaten you. The kids don't even know that that pornography is a crime. Watching a pornography is a crime. You see, the recently 12-year-old girl was caught with a few boys in a hotel. Did you read that?
No.
It's a 12-year-old girl. There's a 5 boys in the room.
Oh my
and
God.
Some of them were underage, some were 19 years old. That's already a statutory rape. A child which is a girl below 16, whether she's Muslim or non-Muslim, and if anyone has have a sexual relationship with the child, it's already a rape.
Absolutely. I mean, it's shocking to hear all on all these little examples that you brought up, because, you know, being a Malaysian, I apologize for not being in the know either. So, you know, this is the reason why we wanted to do this interview as well, so that we can highlight some of these issues. So it brings us nicely to our third question, which is, what is the impact on children and youth when we choose to ignore sex education? Do you have any statistics that you could share?
Okay, the social issues in Malaysia for past 30 years is still high. I wouldn't say it's like that there's so much of improvement. There are some improvement, but it's not so much. So if you, for example, back in 2015, the Ministry of Health actually came up with statistics saying that 50 teenage pregnancy daily.
Oh my God.
Okay, that's in 2015. But then in 2018, in average, there are 30 cases per day. Yes, there are some small changes, but why is this changes? So if you go back again, back in 2017, okay, Richard Hucker become famous in Malaysia. Okay, if you, Richard Hucker was one of the like biggest pedophile case in Malaysia. He was a British guy who came to our country, and he was actually molesting a lot of children, boys and girls, okay, while he was teaching here.
Oh my God.
Okay, he was a teacher back then here, okay? And he had been molesting a lot of kids, especially from the urbanic poor. Okay? So because of him, the case was actually become famous back in 2017. Since then, there's a lot of calls for actions, awareness, activities for that particular, even UNICEF involved, DG, PDRM, there's a law reform. That's how the Sexual Offence Against Children Act 2017 came out.
Mm.
All this because of the particular case. People were so shocked about him.
Yeah.
So because of that, there's so many programs were done, and we can see some small changes in a statistic.
Yeah.
If this never been brought up and there's not much action been taken, this number might have been piked. Mm-hmm. Okay. Or maybe it will maintain, I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But we can see some change because of that. Because since then, I remember NGOs were actually taking so much actions, a lot of debate going on about sex education is relevant or not relevant, you know.
Mm.
The parliamentary, actually, the MPs are actually taking actions on it. You can see quite a number of changes since the Richard Hucker cases.
So as an outcome of the Richard Hucker case, what are the prominent policies that came into place?
Okay, for example, you go back, as I said, that Sexual Offence Against Children Act 2017. In the past, we only talk about sexual assault, means there must be penetration.
Okay.
If there is no penetration, there's no case.
Mm.
But because of the law,
even
exchanging pictures,
yes,
nude pictures, is a crime.
Good.
Okay, even text message, you see, we call that sex text, okay, sexting.
Sexting.
Sexting, even that is a crime.
Yeah.
And even a child can snapshot that particular sexting and just go to the police and say that somebody's sexting me.
Oh, that's awesome. What's the punishment for that if they get caught?
Oh, you can even be prisoned for even 5 years, 10 years. It's depend to how severe it's the case.
Yeah.
And it's also make the people in trust obliged to make a report. Means, initially they said that only 3 persons have the obligation to make a report, like doctors, teachers, and parents, guardians.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but now, anybody who heard, seen, suspect, you actually can make a police report. And with this this is suspicions, the police can start investigation.
Yeah.
Yeah, this give children more rights, even more participations in making reports. And there's a lot of hotline. They can just WhatsApp.
Yeah. I'm really glad to hear that, but still a bit sad that it only came about 3 years ago, 2017, and we're 2020. It only came about 3 years ago, and this should have been done a lot earlier, right? So based on, you know, the work that you do with the policies that have come into place, have you seen on the ground, right, with the work that you do within the ecosystem that you're in, how has these policies now affected these children and parents? And you know, have you seen a lot of changes within this space in terms of parents, their understanding?
Sex is still a taboo in our country. The debate on sex and sexuality education is still going on in our country. So we can see, because a lot of authorities, including teachers and parents, still think that the children need more moral values, the children need more religion, you know, the abstinence base. So they're going into abstinence base than informed choice. So when you do abstinence, okay, kids nowadays are not like our time. I don't know. Okay. Like parents say so, we just follow.
Yeah.
Kids are becoming very curious. They want to know why. Yes. With the social media in their hand. Sometimes they've seen something and just want a clarification from us. But as a parent, sometimes we don't have enough knowledge even to explain, or we feel very weird, odd.
Awkward.
Yeah, to talk to children, yes. You see. And where else the children will turn? They go to the social media or ask their friends for more information. Yeah. So although the Ministry of Education said that, oh, the teachers are trained for this, we do have a syllabus called that Kesihatan Diri, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But the teachers themselves are parents.
Yeah.
See, and they also have their own, how do you call, the own principles, and they feel it's sometimes it's more like duty calls, okay, but they don't have the heart to do so.
Yeah.
So they just read what in the book, but they're not doing further. You see, and they're very judgmental way when they teach.
Yeah.
You see, yeah. So this is the problem, because the statistic also said that there was a research done by the ministry, okay, National Health Mobility Survey. It said that in Form 1 to Form 5, okay, 7 out of 100 children are sexually active. Okay. So, and we have almost about 2,500 schools in Malaysia, and we have about 2 million children in high school. So if you calculate, it's about 150,000 students in Malaysia in secondary school are sexually active. And so if you calculate per school, it's almost about 60 children per school are sexually active.
Wow.
So, but how many of us know who are those children? And that's including boys. Okay. So when I say child is also boys or children when they're below 18, you see. And when the children are having like they are in relationship, boyfriend, girlfriend, okay. And when there's a case, like for example, a girl being in sexual relationship, right? If the girl is below 16 and the boy is another 17 years old boy, okay, he can be charged for statutory rape. And he can be in a juvenile home. Like, for example, Henry Gurney, okay, Tunas Bhakti, for example. Okay, but then the guy and the girl could say that, but we are in a consented relationship, consensual relationship. But then the law didn't protect the boy. The law is only protecting the girl.
Yeah, that's true.
You see, so the boy who didn't know about the legality in the relationship, he will say that, but I love the girl. That is how sometimes some parents ended up getting them married. You see, so we actually have seen quite a number of boys in high school, in schools, that keep saying that it was not me who wanted hold hand, but she keep pressuring me, saying that you don't love me, that's why you're not holding me. You know, that kind of peer pressure?
Yeah, of course. So in this case, what would be a policy that should be in place to protect the boys as well?
According to those who were in the task force to make the particular law, they were saying that it still need to be revised again to protect the boys.
Yeah.
Because currently, if the parents or somebody actually make a complaint about this, or even the child she was pregnant and she actually went to a clinic, for example, and she's underage and she's not married, for example, even the doctor have to make a police report. Okay, so that's how the story will go back to the boy, and the boy will be caught. If the parents say, we don't want to make any police report, just let them get married. Okay, this thing happened, and sometimes they just send the child for abortion, which in Malaysia, that abortion is legal with conditions. So, and then many doctors do not want to perform it. And some of them, they just put the child in a home and ask the child to give birth and give the baby for adoptions. So all these things happen.
So it's interesting how you said about, you know, the statistics on high school kids who are sexually active. So we don't know whether it is by consent or, you know, is it with a boyfriend at school, or does it include, like, you know, some of those really sick stories where you hear the father or a family member who is sexually abusing these kids? Would this fall into the statistics?
Oh, unfortunately, the statistic didn't say, like go deeper than whether it was consented or not. But in Malaysia alone, we do have a lot of incest case. So we can see almost every week, you can see a case.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I was reading that usually 95% of the perpetrators is a family member, and is usually an uncle, a father, or, you know, someone who's related
teacher.
Who's related to the girl, and that's really sad.
Like at the moment, I am doing a case. At the moment, I'm just guiding someone from different states, actually. And this case was like a father who molested five of the children, the children didn't even know that they were actually assaulted or molested. And it's only because the mother caught the father doing an actions. And when they made a police report, and when they tracked back, the other children say the father did the same thing to them. And he'd been doing that for years.
Oh my God.
With the child. And the child didn't even know it was wrong. So that's how grooming happened. You see, the way they will groom until the child think it is okay.
And it's normal.
Yes, it is normal. And sometimes they didn't even want to do the police report because they feel bad putting the father in jail. They're like putting blame on the fathers. And they feel like, no, my father just care for me. You see? And broken family, divorcing, and then putting the father away is a traumatic event for the child, because the child will start blaming themselves because of me.
Yep.
My father is actually in the jail. Because of me, my family has broken.
Okay.
Okay, so this is also another element that we need to see when we talk about this issue, because we have quite a number of children who have actually been traumatized because of this event, and they have self-blaming. Because of that, they refuse to go and even do a police report. And sometimes you can see them changing their statement after they made the report, because they start feeling guilty.
So do we have support systems like rehabilitation centers, you know, support programs that actually help families go through this, and especially the abused?
Unfortunately, in Malaysia, mental health is still a small area in Malaysia, and not everybody they believe in mental health. Unfortunately, although we've been doing a lot of awareness on mental health, but people just don't get it, that mental health is something like, especially trauma, it can actually live with you for many years, sometimes entire life, if you don't get it treated. Okay? And going for family counseling therapy is a taboo.
Okay? Why? And why though?
Because when you talk about mental, they just ingat crazy, gila. Okay. See, this is what people start talking. Oh, he's not mentally stable. What do you mean? He's gila?
Yeah.
So the word, it make people feel very, very scared, fear, stigmatized. So they just don't want to be in that group. Okay. Because we have seen quite a number of cases where children, after the police report and everything, they go to court case. Yes, the case is settled, but children never been in any support system. The children never been to any counseling.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
That's like the foundation that we should look into, because these children grow up into becoming adults. And if it's not addressed from the foundations, they either grow up to become perpetrators themselves, or they grew up, you know, with the trauma living in them. And therefore, you know, they become this person in society where, you know, they live with insecurities, they go through mental health issues, as you mentioned, depression, stress, anxiety, and some all sorts of different form of mental disorders. And, you know, they don't become the best versions of themselves. So when we look at, you know, when we talk about having a safe and secure society and making that as a vision for Malaysia, I feel that Malaysia does not do enough to really look into the issues of these sorts of things, particularly when it comes to family law, right? So everything that we mentioned here is all interrelated to family law, women's rights in Sharia law, intervening into family issues is something which, you know, the government and the police see as that's a domestic issue, nothing to do with me, we shouldn't interfere. But everything we've just mentioned is actually, it stems from that, right? The family upbringing, the environment that they're in, and then it becomes something which is a crime, because then it becomes a rape, etc. Then only it becomes a police issue. That's such a wrong way, because it goes to, like, you know, like health issues. You either treat the sickness or you try to prevent the diseases, right? So we don't prevent, we try to treat it after it's happened. And this is such a frustrating thing, particularly, you know, for me when I think about it, because it shows that our policies and our governance and our institutions are all weak. And we have so many good people like yourself doing all this work on the ground who can tell and inform policymakers on what to do. And this should be priority. Then once you get this right, everything else will fall into place as well, if you're able to build good, strong societies with the right.
So if you see that, first of all, in Malaysian schools, all schools have a school counselors, right?
Mm-hmm.
But do you know that not all school counselors are certified counselors? They are not counselors.
Okay.
They're actually teachers who've been assigned to be school counselors. But they have very basic knowledge to be a counselor.
Yeah.
That is the reason why a lot of school students do not trust counselors, because some counselors do not have ethics as counselor, especially keeping confidentiality.
Mm. Yeah.
Because the school, you know, the school, the teachers' gathering hall, like the canteen or something, they sit and they can just talk about a case and whole school will know.
Oh my God.
And it's a very, because we have done quite a number of talks in schools and the children say they don't trust the school counselors.
Right.
So if the kids cannot trust you, who else they can trust in school?
Yeah.
When? And if you can't be a good listener and you impose your own value in the children, actually the personality of a counselor, you should be a good listener, and you cannot put your, you need to be very neutral.
Okay.
And you need to know a lot of law and legal so that you actually can help the child to tell, do you know in Malaysia it is not legal, you can be charged if you do so. So think twice before you make any decisions. So children don't even know that, and you don't even have a knowledge to give the children. So how do you expect the child actually make a decisions? So we don't have, I mean, we've been actually been advocating for that every school must have a certified counselor under the Malaysian counselor councils. Okay,
so what this, what you're doing now, this advocacy that you're doing, falls under which ministry's purview?
Actually, it supposed falls under Ministry of Women. Okay, Women and also Health. Because Ministry of Women, they're taking care of the social element of our people, especially children and women. They fall under...
But boys can also go through trauma, right?
All right, so when I say children, it's also boys.
But why would they fall under women then?
A woman ministry is... Children's is under 18. Mm. They still fall under women ministry.
Okay.
Although mental health is falls under Ministry of Health, but social elements falls under Ministry of Women. So these two departments, ministry, they need to work together with the Ministry of Education.
Mm.
Okay, they need to work together. So you see, but the problem is not many councils are actually interested to even have go for some sort of capacity building to know more about trauma or even the legal issues. I mean, like, for example, social issues and legal aspect. Because I just did one week ago, I did a workshop with 40 schools.
Yeah.
And we did with the CRIP, okay? We did about legal aspect and what is the social issues among teenagers on sexual reproductive health. And most of them don't even know what is age of consent. Okay, most of them, they actually don't even know that what is there's a law that protecting children, like when there's a sexting. They actually can make a police report. They keep telling us that there's a duty of Ministry of Health and there's a duty of the Ministry of Welfare, you know, the welfare department. Okay, but we keep telling that as a teacher, you also have a duty to make a report.
Absolutely.
That they were like, that's not mine, and I'm not going to interfere, because they're very afraid to go to court, you know, go up and down to police station to solve cases.
Yeah.
You see?
And so, then, yeah. And we have to also question, right, why is it that they're so afraid of going to court or going up and down to police station, as you mentioned? What? So there's more to it, right? Either, you know, they get involved in a very lengthy, drawn out process, because it's inefficient, so you make everybody fearful of people wanting to be involved in such a process and getting involved. Then, you know, it's not, as a teacher, you are the sex case is of somebody else. Now I have to get involved. So it's the feeling, right, of how this person will have to go through.
Actually, my personal view is most of the schools actually more into reputations. So you can see that which school have the highest straight A's, which schools actually get more the best in the district, best in the states. You see, which schools are actually win competition. So it's, they always go for this. And when it comes to children who are having social issues, this kind of such case, they do want people to know because they're afraid the school names will go down. You see, so because of that, sometimes they just want to ask the person just. Pindah sekolah, just change school, and then it always, that's why somebody drop out, you can see difficulty to put them back into school system. That a second chance, we struggle a lot to put back children who drop out. We struggle really a lot, and we have to go to so many, the schools will start saying, where's the guardian? And we're like, we are the social worker. No, you need to bring the legal guardian. And some B40s, when the parents are passed away, sometimes the aunties or aunts are actually taking care.
Yes.
And they don't even know they need to have a certificate, say they're legal guardian. And we have to go back again to them, go to the court and take the oath and then make sure they have a legal guardianship. You know, sometimes the child don't have a proper certificate or birth cert because the parent passed away, give the child here, you know. And we have to go back again to the Pendaftaran Negara to get that. The cert and so on, the process to put a child back to school, it's really troublesome. Fine. If the person who are doing it, she doesn't have a capacity and not strong willpower, she might even say, it's okay, I'm just going to move to different case. Fine. It's always happened.
Yeah.
We have even went to all the way to Putrajaya to talk to the high-end people to actually say, can you help the child to back to school?
What I don't understand is that, you know, we are a country, you know, trying to digitize the economy and the country. But when it comes to, you know, databases and being able to track and trace, for some reason, it's like all of a sudden we become buta IT, you know? Nobody knows how to use technology to keep track of these people. And it's such a shame to hear this, because Malaysia is such a country that has so much opportunities to leverage on its talent and its youth and its young people. But with these little things, they don't understand the impact that will be had on these children, right? If they don't solve it. And it really, honestly, like the things that you've mentioned, if they had a good system in IT infrastructure, they can so easily get people in and out of the system and register them and put them into the next school. I don't know why it becomes such an issue. So that's a one shortcoming, a big shortcoming of the government.
So if the school are so into academic and so into reputations, how do you want the school to actually do more things for this to curb the social issues? This is the last thing. That's why they keep putting the naughty kids in Taffy school. They put the naughty kids in the kids with some issues in Tunas Bhakti, you know, they want the child to be out. But the children who go to Tunas Bhakti, most of the children, they're actually out of the education system. They're not in school. So if you enter Sunas Bhakti age of 14, by the time you're out age of 18, you practically lost. You're not even sitting SPM. Unlike children in Henry Gurney. Children in Henry Gurney, they actually sit for SPM. Yep. Some of them sit for STPM and they get very good score. And once they're out of Henry Gurney, they actually can go back to the system. So even these kids who actually been, they maybe take drugs or maybe they have actually did something, you know, like, and they actually can go back to society. So we didn't have a proper going back to society project.
Yeah.
Kids who've been pregnant, you know, she delivered a child, then what about her? Can she go back to school?
Yeah, so rehabilitation centers and support system to reintegrate these people who've fallen out of society back into society, right? This is one of the important things. So, you know, to amplify your message, what is, with the number of rape and abuse and social cases and, you know, misconduct and just, you know, even the adults, like teachers and all that, trying to wash their hands, what is the social and economic cost to our country, to put it into perspective?
Okay. I'm actually a very patriotic person, okay? I'm very nationalist, okay? So for me, if your people, your citizen is unhealthy, your citizen is sick, your citizen need help, your citizen has fallen behind, how can they help to for the country growth? See, when you talk about country growth, it's not only technology. How tall is your skyscrapers, you know, how good is your internet line? It's not about that alone. But it's about the people on the ground. You need to feel safe in your own country. And if you're not safe in your own country, if the country law doesn't protect you, doesn't give you the justice that you need, how can you even see your Merdeka? You've practically been, I don't know, been oppressed by your own system, you see. So if you talk about the victim of the abuse, like sexual abuse, even the perpetrator could be children, you know, who need more help to rehab, okay? Yeah. But you do not have a proper support system for the children or even to rehab the child so that once they can actually go through this traumatic event or even issues when they're trying to feel, it's time for me to go out, there is no path for you. They will just turn back, you see, especially mental health. If you don't treat the mental health, this trauma will be in them. So that will make the person become depressed, you know, they've been shunned by the family members, okay, and then they're not in the school, you know, they don't even have the skills to go further. Sometimes mentally they're very exhausted. They have mistrust on people. And even they don't want to have another relationship because the person who done it to them is a person close to them.
Yes.
You see? And sometimes their own parent didn't trust what they said. They've start losing trust toward their parents. They think the parents are not the safe place for them. Yep. The house is not safe home. If the house is not safe, if the school is not safe, where the children will go? They have to go on the street. That's how they start mingle with others who actually start showing love. Could be the bad people who can take advantage on these children, you see?
Yep.
Okay, that's one. And also, this poor mental health can cause them to physical harm, like suicide.
Yeah.
You see? So, and when you talk about victim, we also need to talk about the family members. It's not easy to have someone in your family who've been through such traumatic event like abuse, rape, incest, you know, or teenage pregnancy, you see? Because first, the parent themselves, the family member might feel shame, embarrassed, victim blaming. Yeah. But sometimes they just don't understand such issues need long term to heal. And you need to give much more commitment. And sometimes they themselves are very tired, fatigued, people are talking, you know, societies. Sometimes just give up. And all they do is they just sometimes chase the children or let go of the child.
Yeah.
You see? So it's a very systematic, holistic approach from all level. Okay, you need that because if you don't give this support to the citizen, to the people, the children, which is also our future, then what future do we have?
Yeah, exactly.
The cycle will repeat again and again.
Yeah, agreed. Do we have a number of what this would cost Malaysia? Like this cost Malaysia 10 million. Every year, because we haven't, you know, we don't address this social issue. So I wonder if there's any ministry or department that actually tracks how much it actually costs the country.
We did try to actually do a research. We've been talking among the civil societies that we actually have a number to say that, okay, because we've been trying to tell the government that if you spend this much of amount in awareness prevention program, you can save the country this much.
Yeah.
You don't have to treat the treatment and so on.
Right.
But unfortunately, Malaysian statistics, okay, is not very, good. And then like sometimes it takes you 2 to 3 years to see, and like, for example, the only thing I can see the teenage pregnancy 2018, but already 2020, whereas 2019, I'm not sure. The even the HIV cases in Malaysia also, we only have up to 2016. Okay, but reason we got 2018 just a few months ago. But sometimes it takes them so much time to come up with statistic.
Yeah.
And also with the Malaysia's growth is going up and down, you know, and with the MCO, it's so difficult for me to tell you the amount, but definitely it can actually a fortune for the country if they can prevent from the beginning.
Yeah.
Because like imagine 2 million children are in high school.
Yes.
And imagine all these 2 million kids actually grow in a healthy way.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Healthy environment. They are our country, like future and income, you know, for the country.
Exactly.
Yeah, but if out of 2 million, 7% of them are dropping, and this 7% going to impact the people around them, that's huge.
Yeah. It's just not them, right? It is the people around them, their family members, and everyone else that they meet along the way.
Right, correct.
I'm interested to know who actually collects these statistics. Is it the Malaysian Department statistics?
Malaysian departments actually, they will get the statistics from different departments, like for the Ministry of Health, Ministry of Education, Ministry of Women. They get some statistics from NGOs and so on. But we do not have a proper system to collect the information from the field, especially those who drop out. Okay? Those children, okay, for example, Malaysia, in Malaysia, according to the law, children must be in school, okay, must have education, age of 7 to 12. It's a must. It's a compulsory education.
Okay.
But once a teacher in secondary is not compulsory.
Okay.
So imagine, although the kids must be in school until age of 12, but we still have a lot of kids who are not in school. Okay. We also have a lot of kids who cannot read and write. So where does this children falls in?
Yeah.
I was just looking into some statistics in 2018 to find what's the number of children not in school or children drop out. I couldn't even find the statistic.
Yeah. Where did you find the statistics about the 2 million kids in high school?
It's the Ministry of Education. They actually have an infographic report for 2018. So actually, I saw it there. So they have an infographic. But there are some statistics missing there. So most probably because they couldn't find the number, because kids who are out of the system, who actually have the number.
Yeah. Okay. I heard about how Malaysia and our ability to keep track of statistics is just really poorly. And I think this is one of the major challenge and issues that we should really solve, because only through statistics and data can you actually come up with like solutions, right? So understanding the numbers, are they rising? Are they decreasing? For whatever reasons, we need to be able to track this. If we are unable to track this from, you know, sexual crime to all the other things, the abuses, to, you know, the hardcore poor people. So all these different social injustices that's happening around us, we should create a system that enables us to track, to understand the issues, and then to solve the problem. But when we don't have data, where are you going to come up with policies, right? You can't just pluck policies from the sky and think that this is going to be a winning policy with the rakyat just because, you know, it's a popular policy. So honestly, that's something that we should definitely improve on. So bringing us to like our last two questions, Rabia, what are you and your organization and other organizations within your network doing to combat and overcome these challenges that you face, you know, within the space that you operate?
Okay, so like as second chance mainly focus in the mental health of the, our own beneficiaries, right? So most of them, they are actually on they are survivor of domestic and sexual violence. Okay, so this, beside the stigma and the discrimination because of the status of HIV, HIV alone has a stigma because people scared of it, right? That they do, the kids be in the school and someone know they're HIV positive. Sometimes they just don't want them to be there because the fear is still there. I hate to admit this, but although we've been learning in school, there's a lot of articles about it, but fear is very high. So besides those fear toward HIV and HIV status, they also face a lot of trauma and distrust to others. Okay. Yeah. So what we feel that these children, they actually, they drop out, they drive for home, they go to delinquent activities, you know, they actually have a loss of interest to study, loss of interest in anything. They sometimes they just want to leave the day. You know, they're not even interested more. So we've been doing a lot of work on this issues. But of course, we as a part of the Child Rights Coalition Malaysia, so as we do involve in other element of children, like for example, education, literacy, beside talking, and also stateless children. We do have a stateless children. You see, the documentation and so on. So as a Child Rights Coalition itself, actually working in very holistic issues when it comes to children. So they are actually our partners, you see. And also, we are also in a technical working group for comprehensive sexuality education. That we are trying our best to make sexuality education is a compulsory in all schools, so we can have an age appropriate.
Just a question on that. I wasn't clear. If we actually do have sex education in our curriculum, do we have it now or we don't have it yet?
We won't call it as sexuality education. We call it as adolescent health. We call it as adolescent health.
Yeah, do we have it?
Adolescent health. But it's taught in science. It's some been taught in agama class. Some been taught as what do you call that? PJ, the physical
PE.
PE,
physical education.
Yeah, physical education. So you can imagine that how each teacher holding different hat and different elements. So this one going on.
Yeah.
So Suhakam did came last year to actually launch their human rights module with MOE, but it's only for PT3 and only for UPSR kids. When during the school, at the end of the year, when they're actually waiting for exam or waiting for their result, something, it's just a few weeks or a month. But I have seen the module. I still don't know how well it can be implemented. The module is beautiful. It has human rights. It's about legal element, everything, child conventions, everything, the children's right. But I just don't know how the teachers can actually part in the school.
Interesting.
So we actually have a very good module. The MOE has a good module. It's just the implementations are not good. Okay. Yeah. So, and they go for into abstinence based instead of informed choice.
Yeah.
So all they do like, okay, jangan buat.
Yeah. So what do you think about that? Should we move into informed choices rather than abstinence? What are the thoughts on the ground about this?
If you go for abstinence base, of course you will tell them don't do.
Yeah.
Okay. Fine, you can say don't do, but did you explain to them why they shouldn't do? The why is matter. It's not about don't do. It's about why you shouldn't be doing it. So you need to talk about mental aspect. You need to talk about physical aspect. You need to talk about financial and social aspect. For the student to understand legal aspect, is it legal for you to do sex with another boy at age of 12? No, it is not. Okay? Then we had to talk about, are you mentally prepared? Is it what you want?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you know what people will say if they find out? Are you okay to face a social?
Yeah.
Do you know the consequence? You might get pregnant because you're fertile. Yeah. The child don't understand they're fertile.
Yeah.
You're already fertile and they need to understand. So what could happen if you're pregnant? Are you going to go through this? So all these things need to be tell the children that they will start thinking, I don't feel that's something I want to do now.
Yeah, but given what you've just said, I think it's better to go with informed choices and decisions, and then speak about what are the repercussions, what are the consequences, what are the religious implications, etc. But it's just to inform. It is correct. Not, when you say don't do, that's when people want to do more than anything else, right? Because they want to explore, they're curious, you know, the more you say don't, that the more they want to do it. So right. I just present you with all the facts and I share with you in a very objective manner. And then I think that's a more approachable and people will be more open to embracing this new information rather than making it taboo, rather than, you know, ostracizing people from society when they talk about these things. So those are the kind of things which we need to talk about more, discuss more, and make it into a conversation. You know, I actually don't have this conversation with any of my friends or network, in all honesty, Rabia. And I think that is bad, right? So, you know, bringing this back onto our final question and to the audience, you know, what can others, you know, individuals like me, people who work in the corporate and private sector particularly, you know, can do to amplify this message, help you in your work that you do, and create the change most needed to protect our children and youth?
Okay, so I would say everything starts from home. Okay, everything starts from home. You don't have to do something so big. Start from home is like start with your own family member, your own child. Like, start talking about it. So normalize it and commonalize the sex security education. Like, for example, even talk about vagina and penis. So what is so shame about it? It's a part of our body. But we tell our children it's flower, tutu, I don't know. You know, all these funny words. And if I'm a teacher at the kindergarten, I will be like surprised, like, what are you trying to tell me? You see? But when we also, when you teach from the child was like, what, 2 years old, we're trying to tell her the body, and you make her feel so, like, this is very sensitive, you're not going to talk about it. So the child will start growing, think, I shouldn't be talking about anything about my private parts. You see? I shouldn't be telling my mom about anything. So that will make, that's how you make the children start thinking, this is wrong. It's immoral, and I shouldn't be talking about it. So when you start making this conversation normal in your daily life, I don't think that this would be a better discussion. If they have a boyfriend, if somebody touched them, or they have seen a friend being touched wrongly, they can say, Mom, I saw the teacher hold my friend like this. Is it wrong? I think it's wrong. And you can be like, who did that? And you can, as a parent, you can take an action next. You see? So it should be, you should be normalizing it. One. And another that we should take this as is more on investing now, preventing, investing in education more so that we can prevent a bigger problem. You see? They keep thinking that sex education is only teaching how to have a sex. No, it's beyond that. Yeah. So start knowing what is actually comprehensive sexual education. What are the 8 aspects that we're talking about and how we can teach our children since the time they were born until they grow, and how it can be helpful for me, even I'm an adult, so how it can help me, you see? So for them, this is something they need to be, have, it's a daily life, okay? It's something that as important as other thing, you see? You shouldn't put the thing aside, like it's not so big deal, academic is more big deal. It's not about that, but it's social issues actually contribute a lot on our growth, okay? Not just society, but also the country growth,
you see? So Robbie, I had a question. So I think this is brilliant, great advice. And so as a parent myself to 2 boys, right? They're 10 and 12. So my question is, you know, I do want to have this conversation with them, but I'm just not sure how and when, at what age, at what stage. So everything that you said, okay, I want to normalize and have this conversation, but I as a parent need some guidance. Mm-hmm. Where can I find that guidance?
Okay, actually, I've been through one beautiful website. It's a Canadian website. It has a module for teachers and parents. I'm not sure where, like, it's called Comprehensive Sexuality Education for Teachers. It's very beautiful. It says that from 0 age, zero age, how what you can tell your children.
Fantastic. So you can share the link with me, and then I will share it in the comments of the recording when we actually publish the podcast. So, you know, it's great that we have this. And as you mentioned before, because sexuality is something which should be from country to country because of like the nuances, etc. So when is Malaysia going to have this, right? Suited for our dynamics and demographics? in terms of our multiculturalism, you know, multi-ethnicity, multi-religion. Therefore, we should have one, just like this Canadian one that you're going to share with us, for helping parents, people like me, like you, etc., to really know how to go through this conversation with our kids and how to introduce it to them and how to kind of normalize it so that, you know, there's a guide. I don't think we have this either, right? So that'll be a good starting point. Even as an NGO, maybe you can help to kickstart a module and a YouTube channel, for example, that can help us. If I need something, I can go to this YouTube channel and say, my child's like kind of like 12 now. What's the right thing to say? How do I say it without, you know, because we all grew up in this system. We all grew up in this system where, you know, sexuality education has been taboo. So like it or not, even as I want to talk about it, I feel my body, you know, feeling a bit awkward when I talk about it, because we grew up in that system. So I can imagine, and I'm quite open, and I'm in terms of like my conversation and communication, but I can imagine more, you know, people who are a lot more closed or introverted will even struggle a lot more to even have these kinds of conversations. So there really should be a portal that would that can help and support this education from home by parents, by families, to help teach the children. So I hope, you know, Rabia, that maybe PT Foundation and the other organizations that you work with can come up with something like this, because I think that'll be very useful.
We do have few friends who are actually doing so. They are coming up with the kit that the parents can use to teach children. So they do have another NGO called Rescue. Okay, yeah. They also, I can share the link with you later. Please. So yeah, they're practically trying to teach teachers and parents how to make a conversation according to age. So, yeah. So that, but using very fun activity like drawings, dolls, yeah, because children, so how you can talk to children. Children are more like soft, cartoony, fun way. But when it comes to teenagers, it's more on discussions with them. Mm. But then how to make them feel less awkward, you see? Yeah.
So even the parents. The parents feel less awkward.
Because in my team, I have two friends who are actually married with three children, and one of them all boys, one of them all girls.
Yeah.
So usually they try the method on their child, and then they see whether the child can understand. And
yeah,
they usually do that, and it's so funny to see how the kids. Because one of the child, whenever I go near her, she will start doing like this, and I'll be like, "Why she doesn't like me?" And then they will say, "Bad touch." She knows that you're a stranger. It's a bad touch. And I'm a lady, you see?
Yeah,
I'm a mother's friend, yet the child will be like, girl like this. And I feel like, okay, that is awesome, good. But after she got to know me, then she started, okay, she come to me. And then auntie, you know, she come. But when the first time I met her, she was more like, stay away from me.
Yeah.
So it's a stranger fear. But it's good because the mother told her that, say no and run. And that's what she do. She know everything, you see?
That's so cute.
So it's like a game between parents, and they start having this conversation more. And it's nice to see that the parents and children have very good communication. Good communication is the key of everything.
Yes.
If you can't talk to your child, especially about their body, who else can talk to your child?
Yeah.
See, so because I do have a child, but I have so many younger brothers. So as the elder sister, I always have a problem talking to them at the beginning. And my mother always said, you're the doctor, so you should be knowing how to talk to him medically. You see, like, it's not about medical, but it's more social. Yeah. And how to make them feel less awkward. They can be open up, building rapport.
Yeah.
But after some time, and we keep talking about issues and this and that, we can just have a normal conversation over the dinner, for example. Mm.
Yeah.
And nobody feel like shy. It's okay. You know, so because at the beginning it's very tough when I start doing it. But now I think we have a baby in the house, and we keep telling her, no, that is either we call that is a private. We call it private, or we just say that vagina. But she still cannot pronounce it. But she would keep looking down, and then she don't know. No. So we realize that the child is having curiosity. She's just 1 year old. But she already started to have a curiosity on her body, and she's keep looking things, you know. But it's a time for us to start teaching her now.
Okay.
Okay, it's very awkward.
You need to train me. I need to have more conversations with you.
I think more parents should have a support system.
Yeah.
Like best friends, right? We all have girlfriends, and then just sit and like talk about our children. Like, how do you do with your child? How do you do with the child?
Agreed. You know?
So yeah. Even over your tea time or on the phone, you just have a chat with your friends.
Yeah.
It's okay to talk because you need a support system. There's no right way of parenting.
Mm.
Everybody is learning. There's no school to be parents.
Yes, agree. Yes.
But we should be the first line to protect our children.
Yes, brilliant. Thank you so much, Rabia, for your time and spending with us, you know, and sharing all this insightful information with me and the audience. And I just have one final question which I wanted to ask, which is, how did you get into this? You know, what was the catalyst that got you into this particular space?
I think because it was very sensitive and taboo, so it's very challenging to me. One. Mm. That's one. And I do felt that when I was in a health system, I do feel like as a doctor, our work's always on treating patients. Mm. But things come to us when it's for treating. But the problem is in prevention way, the awareness. People don't have it. So imagine a child comes, she's pregnant, and then at the end, you just call her, you should know. And she don't know. How can a scholar, you should know, you see? Yeah. And putting blame on parents, don't you realize that? Don't you know that? And they just look at you like, I don't know. I didn't realize. Yeah. So then I realized that there's more work to be done on the field work, but there's not many people, professionals, actually on the ground, especially with the medical knowledge and this, to actually like trying to improve the social issues. So that's why I feel like I think my work needed more on the ground.
Yeah.
And after all, it's my country. So if not me, who else will do it? See?
Exactly. Yeah. I love that. I mean, that's such a privilege and honor to speak to you this afternoon. Thank you so much, Rabia. I hope, you know, all the audience who are listening to this podcast will get inspired and also want to do more, right? From whatever perspective, even if you're working in the corporate world, reach out to the NGOs, reach out to people like Rabia, you know, and see how can we help and amplify their voices. So I hope, you know, for you, Rabia, this has also been an interesting conversation. So I hope to have more conversations with you in the future.
Sure, sure. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening in. If you liked it, give it a thumbs up, subscribe, leave a comment, and share with your friends. Be sure to tune in to the next episode, and to find out how to be part of Societal Shapers, head to www.plcadilla.com and check out our coaching programs. Catch you soon!